One of the problems that develops with volcanoes that erupt from these kinds of magmas is even though high viscosity suggests that it would be sticky and maybe not flow very fast, the eruptiveness will trump the viscosity. And so these high viscosity, high silica, high gas content magmas often produce extremely fast-moving flows. We call these pyroclastic flows. And these are hot ash that can move at over 100 kilometers an hour. So more than 60 miles an hour. People cannot outrun these. They try, and they fail. Pyroclastic eruptions can be super exciting if you live near them. So, for example, folks who live around Mount Pinatubo are always having to worry a little bit about that producing pyroclastic flows. And there are many people who've died on the slopes of Mount Pinatubo when it did erupt. Another fun hazard that volcanoes can present, if you live near one that has a high enough elevation to have snow and ice, is something called a lahar. And this is floods or debris flows that come off the side of a mountain, a volcano, when the heat from the eruption melts ice and snow at the top of the volcano. That ice and snow becomes this heated slurry of mud and ash and all the water from that snow and ice, and they can move very, very quickly. And they'll come right down off the side of that volcano and just bury anything that is around them. So, if you live in high terrain with volcanoes, you have extra excitement in your life. Let's think about all the magmas that didn't erupt. We have this whole classification scheme for igneous rocks that formed underneath Earth's surface, the plutonic igneous rocks. Why don't they get to the surface? And how do we even know they exist? If they form so far below our feet, we shouldn't be able to see them. So if we think about how magma rises, it's only going to rise if it is less dense than the material around it. Now, when you transition from a solid to a liquid, for most materials, the liquid is less dense than the solid. And so magma is going to rise because it's less dense than solid rock. Now we get back to composition again. Mafic magma is denser than felsic magma and felsic rock. So if mafic magma is working its way up through the mantle and it's coming up to the bottom of the crust, most of our crust is actually felsic. And because of that density difference, our mafic magmas are going to get stalled out at the bottom of the crust, and they're not going to be able to make their way through unless there's a deep-seated fracture or fault that the material can come up. Felsic magmas, because they're the same composition as the crust around them, but they're in a liquid state, they can go ahead and rise on up through the continental crust. So, when magmas stall out, when they don't make it all the way up to the Earth's surface to form a volcano, they're going to cool under the surface, and they're going to come in all sorts of different shapes and sizes. So if we get a big, huge body, we call that a pluton, or a batholith. If we get a vertically oriented, cooled, crystallized magma, like a big sheet that's vertically standing, we call that a dike. If it's horizontal, like it intruded between the layers of some other rock type, we call that a sill. And all these different shapes and sizes are just the magma finding the place where the density of the magma is the same as the density of the rock around it. It stalls out, it cools and crystallizes, and it assumes the shape of the space it had managed to get into before it ran out of steam. Now, how do we see plutonic rocks? Over time, as mountains are uplifted and that material is eroded away, that's going to expose these intrusive rocks. So if you think about the valleys at Yosemite, these enormous canyons with these big granite cliff sides that climbers like to attempt to climb up and fall off of. These are granite rocks that are exposed at Earth's surface because we uplifted those mountains and eroded the material down off the top of them and exposed that plutonic igneous rock. Most intrusive igneous rocks are very resistant. They're very hard. And so once you strip off all the soft stuff on top of them, it leaves you with a mountain range. So we need that process of uplift and erosion, which we'll talk about continuously through all of these lectures, as a way to get that little snapshot into what's going on deep beneath the Earth's surface. Now, if we're thinking about mountains uplifting, we're thinking about the material that we're eroding off the top of. That material is going to be what we're going to see is going to compose most of our sedimentary rocks, which is what our next lecture will be on. So we're going to shift directions a lot from the land of fire and explosiveness and exciting igneous rocks to these erosive products that are going to tell us about not only the history of mountains and basins, but also the history of life, because that's where all of our fossils are preserved. So our next lecture will be on this next group of rocks, which are our sedimentary rocks.
This ends Lecture 2.